You are not to discuss this matter amongst yourselves.
We don't submit reports or ask approval for specific operations, if that's what you mean. We are an autonomous department.
Any questions?
Broadcasting from an abandoned subspace relay orbiting Risa, this is Section 31, gathering intelligence for you on Star Trek CCG. Now reporting in, operatives Dan and Rogue.
They know all the secrets that you hide.
Welcome to Section 31, episode number 280. I'm Dan Hammond.
And I'm Rogue Schindler.
This week, we have sat through another episode of the animated series, so we could talk about that. There were a couple of high-level games going on over the weekend, and a local event as well, so we'll talk about that. Also, and this is probably where we'll start off, the rest of Crossover was released, and I mentioned last week, I think, that we'd talk about some of the cards that hadn't been posted yet, so did you have a chance to look through the full set? What did you think?
I did. It was interesting. You know, it's weird. It's always odd with 1E because you get more excited about the verbs than the nouns. You know, that was the whole idea for the set, right? There's already a bunch of cards for these affiliations in theory, but now we're supposed to be getting, you know, new ways to play them, and we finally saw, you know, all the ways to play them. There was, I was interested, and I, you know, we were waiting to find out how the two engines we had seen so far specifically exclude playing Mirror Terek Nor, and now we know why, because Mirror Terek Nor has their own engines.
Yeah, four ways to play, right?
Yeah, so that looks really cool. That'll be interesting. You know, not necessarily just have to play Terran Empire, but decide which way you're going to play Terran Empire, and the same way for the KCA. And I liked the interesting sort of flavor that if you're playing KCA on the station, you get Cardassian and Bajoran for your ports. But if you're playing Cardassian or KCA on Regency, then you're playing Klingons and Cardassians.
Yeah, that's nice. I haven't done the numbers. I wonder which is the, you know, just straight up, you know, more personnel.
Well, the personnel are, as I mentioned, a little less interesting.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of names, but it, on the whole, it looks like, and, you know, necessarily so, that most of these are probably, you know, universal skill hole fillers. And I imagine there's probably some balancing issues going on, too. We got, I know there's only a few Bajorans, so we got, it looks like three Bajorans and only two Cardassians.
Yeah, sure.
A handful of Klingons. And a lot of non-aligned guys that go either way, which is also interesting.
Fitting for the Mirror Quadrant. Did you see the? I like the image on this Klingon ship, this Vorcha, the Yavang.
Yes.
It's a great picture. You know, planets in the background. Always nice. Yeah. I always like to see something other than just the ship. I mean, just a ship picture is great, but we've got so many Vorchas. This is nice.
Captain by Newtall, because we have we already have tall Klingon male.
Yes, there's Katal, and then there's the new tall. No, I like that. I liked Mr. Sisko's Interceptor. A nice ship that takes off and lands once you turn. Only takes one person to crew. That's always nice to have. In fact, it does have a crew requirement, so you can't use it for hit with Hidden Fighter, but still. I think it's nice. Kind of going backwards through these, Reap All the Glory let your any Terran Empire folks do a space mission, and the Terran Empire ships are shields +2, and if you solve with the crew of four, you score 5 points, and then move to the table, and then all your ships are +1. That's pretty good.
It's really good. Those ships are pretty strong, but they're very low on range, so that's a big helper.
Well, even looking ahead to Mirror Starfleet, right? They're going to be Terran Empire, so this works for them
sure.
As well.
Yeah.
For space missions. One would assume one of the ways to play the Mirror Starfleet is going to be with the standard Starfleet. So you can do all the Federation missions. Now, in addition to that, you can do on any space mission. It doesn't even have to be Mirror Quadrant. So, you know?
Yeah.
Team up,
and that's been a weakness, obviously. We've talked about Yeah, you know, Mirror Quadrant trying to get a space mission. They have their own now, but even when you're trying to go to the Alpha Quadrant, you were generally restricted to, you know, trying to find one close to home, you know, the Bajor region or Badlands region. But this kind of opens things up for you. You can just pick anything that has requirements that might fit your needs.
Yep, just take it and go. And 5-point bonus, and all your ships get better. It's tough to argue with. And it gives you it lets you attempt it without actually adding any requirements, which is better than those backwards compatible 2E events that add a requirement for 5 extra points, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Jumping back to the start, there were a bunch of dilemmas got converted that were something to something, and there were two in particular that I thought were pretty good. Face to face, the player with the least points chooses one person that will be killed. So, you know, that's
rolling the dice.
Yeah, it's rolling the dice. You need to be the one who's losing when you hit this, otherwise you're in trouble. And if tied, the ship is damaged and stopped until the end of turn. Well, that's a great first dilemma, right? I mean, if you hit that first before anybody has scored any points, it ships damage and then stopped until the end of next turn. If it's 0-0, that's pretty rough.
Yeah, and it's an interesting, play to try and, man, how do you scale that with, you know, actively trying to stay tied with someone, particularly in 1E. I've got 6 points for
right.
Dabo.
Unlike the other whatever to whatevers where you can manipulate cards in your hand, make sure you have the same number of cards as your opponent, or make sure that, you know, if they reveal cunning, you reveal cunning. They're the same. Yeah. You can kind of work on that a little bit. Points is going to be hard. And the counterpart to face-to-face was head-to-head, which is the Shatners. Unlike the space one, this is the planet, and it's the player with the most points chooses someone to be killed.
You wouldn't be winning at that point.
Yeah, so this is the one, I feel like I would play with this one more because, you know, you don't want to be playing to lose. I suppose if you're playing a deck that's just slow to start and then, you know, does two big missions to win, you know, playing to lose would be okay. But this would be another great first dilemma. Either someone's going to die, and if things are going well for me, I get to choose. And if things are tied, then somebody dies and everybody's stopped. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like it's a big loss if you're not on the right side of that, because you still get a kill out of it.
Mm-hmm. Those were good. There were two other dilemmas that I liked. Buried Alive.
Buried Alive.
I did have one problem with Buried Alive, and that's the lore. It says, Starship Enterprise powerless to help. Khan left Admiral Kirk as Kirk had left him. Marooned for all eternity.
At the center of a dead planet.
It actually doesn't say marooned for all eternity. It just says marooned for eternity.
Yeah.
It's missing that all. That could have been an excellent card if it had that all. But and it's not like there's not room for it. There's a whole extra line there. But this adds a space icon to a planet mission. And then if you hit this, then from now on, it goes on the mission. Now you got to solve it as if it were a dual icon mission. So you got to have a staffed ship and a crew on the surface.
Okay. I was really having trouble with this one because I, for some reason, in my brain logged it as, like, the, you know, because it's Genesis, I think I immediately went thematically, they're in Genesis, that it would flip to space. And I'm like, why would you do this?
Yeah, no. So, and you can't. You can't attempt it unless you have the ship and crew. So, I mean,
oh man, definitely makes it more interesting.
It certainly opens up a huge realm of possibilities. You can send them off on a Cytherian's run, I don't think I can remember the last time I played against someone with a dual mission. You know, Tarkanian study, or was it search for survivor, something like that. Captives.
There's
like that.
Not a lot.
Yeah,
only like two or three.
Yeah. So,
but that makes it so you can plan to do that. Though that was always the problem with those missions, was you hit them and you're like, oh god, this throws off all my combos. I have to, you know, I either have to hit you with an easy dual combo, because those missions are generally worth a lot of points.
40s, yeah. So you throw this down first, and then you've got, you know, if you're playing a three-card combo, you've got a weird planet mission, planet dilemma, or a weird space, and it's going to hit them Earth equally. And how about this? If you're playing with a limited dilemma set, right, you can play... If you're running a lot of not duels, is what I'm getting at,
yeah.
You can use this as a planet or a space combo, right? If you play this first, you
or
can
both.
Use your you can use your space dilemmas where they put a planet. How about this card is the hose for an all planet deck? Because now I have something to do with my space dilemmas.
Oh yeah.
Is that the point of this card? Did I just figure that out? Is it you play with two of these and now you can't play all planet? And expect to get a free pass?
Well, you just... you probably hit that and stop. But you'd hit that and then, you know, hit whatever their first dilemma is.
Right, but if I... So, if the point of you playing... If you play an all-planet deck, right? I've got all these space dilemmas I can't play anything with.
Yeah.
Well, now, I can play space dilemmas at your planet mission. And stop you. And hurt you. And go on hurting you.
Yes. However, if you're doing that, first off, if you have this in your deck, you'll probably already have plans for it. Having all planet might throw that off. That's fine. You shift gears. But if you pile, if you have a six planet deck and you pile, you know, you have your one buried alive and I'm going to put all my space dilemmas there, you're probably going to have more dilemmas there than at your other missions, so I'm probably going to avoid it anyway. You could at least use it, I guess, as a deterrent. Like, I don't want you to have this 40-point mission, so I'm going to pile everything here, and if you do try for it, it's going to be hell.
Fair enough, yes.
But I think I would definitely avoid that. At least there'll be valid points, though. You know, you may think, maybe you can fake them out and say, okay, I'm dumping all my crap here.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would make it interesting, right? You could end up with a three-card combo there that was actually decent dilemmas where you were expecting none.
You'd be like, oh, miss seed, space dilemma.
Yeah. All right. So, interesting. Needs a word of the lore, but that's one of those dilemmas that'll make people think and build new combos, so I like that. The other dilemma I liked, it's already been talked about on the boards a bit, was Assassination Attempt. Your opponent gets to download an assassin to the location, which is pretty good. And then you still have to have some, you know, one personnel with security times two is pretty tough. Transporter skill and integrity is pretty tough. So you drop this, I get stopped. Your assassin, it kills somebody, right? One personnel is killed, random selection. The assassin gets to kill somebody and then bounces to hand. And then you hit this again. And I can download another one.
You can download from hand. You can download the same one.
Yeah. So that could be pretty nasty over and over again. Wow.
Yeah, that's a tough... And it's wall, right? You know? It's an unless, and it doesn't discard.
Yeah, so the Dominion Assassin, that's a vase, who downloads... Founder Agitator downloads Assassination Plot. So... You get the Founder Agitator, he downloads Assassination Plot. Assassination Plot bounces the Agitator back to your hand and kills somebody with, you know, choice skill kill, and then that's discarded. And the next turn, you know, you attempt again, and he's just going to come back. You can't download it again, but maybe you get another one on the planet, you know, somewhere. That could be pretty brutal. I don't know... If you have enough assassins... If your opponent has enough assassins, you're gonna have to do some work to get around that. You're gonna have to have your personnel with two security or your transporter skill integrity. Otherwise, you don't go back because people are just gonna die.
And you can keep, you know, using that as a way to download your assassins to your hand, and then be playing them.
Yeah, playing them and especially playing them and bouncing them or doing whatever. So, that's pretty rough. That was pretty brutal.
I count 1, 2, 9 personnel in the game. You know, modifiers not included with transporter skill and integrity greater than 7. And a surprising number of them are Cardassian.
Well, okay.
Three Cardassians, four Feds, a Klingon, and Romulan Data.
I'm guessing you. Well, I don't know. There's a bunch of people who have double security. Or there's a few people who have double security, but yeah, not that many either.
Well, and Lower Decks will probably help you out with this.
Yeah, sure. Lower Decks, and I see pads becoming more important again to get that up.
But it's integrity, not.
No. Gunning. Sorry. Teddy bears.
You need Kukulaka.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, that's going to be a rough one. Any of the other dilemmas strike your fancy?
I don't know that it was a particular dilemma so much as it was just that there were so many dilemmas. It was kind of like, what is going on? But then I saw, I was pleased that it was not, a 54 card set with 16 dilemmas in it. And it looks like at least 9 or 10 of them are conversions. So I went from being excited that there were so many cards to irritated that there were so many dilemmas to, okay that at least they were, making the set bigger to include all these conversions rather than just, oh, here's a set full of conversions. So I did like that all of those, eye to eye, face to face, head to head, mirror, the quote unquote mirror images were here. That was a nice thematic
yes,
thing.
That was very thematic. All right. One of the things I noted in looking over all the cards in the set are how many off theme cards there were. But that is an interesting way of getting, cards from different properties kind of to match the theme of the set, which is, mirror opposites, that kind of thing. So that was nice.
Yeah.
This has a lot of objective stuff in it. Any of the objectives jumping out at you?
I liked the, I kind of mentioned them when we were doing the crossover preview from Gen Con, but there's the affiliation specific, the KCA one and the Terran Empire one. I think the thing that I find more interesting about the objectives is the, their machine,
mm-hmm.
I lost it. It's an event.
The Fedora card?
Well, that's the, is that the, what does it? Yeah, I think you're right. Taking over. We're taking over. Something like that.
Taking charge.
Man, taking charge. That is a lot more interesting now that we've seen all of the other cards.
Yeah, everybody's attributes plus one.
Where you can just, you can start.
People can go fetch you one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will be fetching, let me download an objective onto that mission. So there are two objectives that I was looking at that are interesting to me. However, they both cedar play on table, or play on the table, so they don't actually go on the mission itself. So I'll have to rethink about that. You can go back to like the Ferengi objective that lets you change all the requirements and just do a mission with these Ferengi things. Weird objectives
yeah.
like that, that you don't want to waste a play. You don't want to spend a resources to draw into or play into. That certainly will take that out.
Yeah, I think that's pretty huge to be able to go and get those things. I mean, those were big seed slots when I was playing that. You'd have to. I was putting them on two space missions, so instead you have one seed slot and you can get all of those instead of having to seed a bunch of things on all of your missions.
You know what's missing from the list? Is Negus.
Oh yeah. Huh. Well, he didn't really do that though. He kind of sent Quark off to go do it, but I see, there's all this usual
Daemon's
wisdom authority
there.
Figures.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go, Daemon.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah, that's fitting. I like
yeah.
that. So the objective that I like is evaluate starship systems.
I was just looking at that.
It's making me the great thing about having the list online and having this in a database is Chris has done his magic and the requires prototype and test mission are already linked right on the card. So there are
yeah.
a dozen prototype ships, including Enterprise, which is the Starfleet ship. And
nice.
Yeah, so that's pretty prominent right there. The Prometheus.
Prometheus,
yeah. The Intrepid and the Galaxy were interesting. Seeing how they're the class ship, that kind of makes sense.
Oh, yeah, the name class.
Yep.
Pegasus.
Yeah, and it's Raptor 1's on there. So, a lot of interesting ships to use. And there's a lot of duplicates on the missions, because Test Mission and Test Mission 2 show up 4 times because they're in all stuff. So, there's Test Mission, Test Propulsion Systems from the old OTSD.
Yep, remember liking that.
Host Metaphasic Shield Test from Next Generation, and the new Test Warship. So I'm counting 4, which is the most you can get anyway on that card. But all of those ships would be attributes +1 for each of those missions. So you play with that mission set, and your ships are attributes +4. That's awesome. And a couple of those give you attribute bonuses, or at least, I remember, Test Propulsion System does.
Well, and a few of those ships are universal.
Yeah.
So it's like, just start, you know, you start with your Space Gore and just start pooping galaxies.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you need that ship for Test Propulsion System anyway. You need a generic ship, so. Test Propulsion, I don't know how that works with the cumulative rule. If you have 2 Test Propulsion Systems, does that count as having 2 missions with Test in the lore, or in the title?
Because they're universal.
Yeah, I don't know if that works. I want it to work.
Well, it's no. Yeah, I mean, I think it does, because it's not the missions text that you're giving it to. So if you had 2, you know, if you were talking about getting the range bonus from 2 Test Propulsion Systems,
I'd say no.
That you would not get that. But those are 2 different missions that have Test in the title that are being targeted by Evaluate Starships systems.
All right, I think I'll buy that.
I think that's a valid play.
All right. So in addition to all that, your galaxy class ships suddenly become better than the Enterprise, right? Because not only can you download them, but their attributes say, let's say, +4, which is ridiculous. When you complete the mission, you get an extra 5 points and draw 3 cards. Now, you'd have to discard this, so you'd lose the bonus. But there's nothing stopping you from seeding more than 1 and discarding it for the points in the card draws the first time. Maybe you want the extra 5 points because you're using a 25-point mission in Test Propulsion Systems. But you can still maintain the bonus if you have more than 1 if you're willing to burn an extra seed slot for it. So that's kind of cool.
So this actually moves to your ship. Yes. So it's not going to affect all of the universal ships like I was...
Right, you wouldn't have a fleet of them.
But you could have several.
And you can get on the first turn. You can get, I mean, Galaxy has been a common from Premier that no one ever uses unless they're trying to turn it into the Enterprise with a bottle of, you know, champagne.
Yeah.
That certainly makes it an interesting play. I wonder what the attributes on the Intrepid are. You know, it only takes 2 to staff, and it would be, if you played it with the right missions, it would be a 12 range ship with 12 shields. That's not bad.
Holodeck, it's 8/7/8.
Yep. So, that could be fun. Even if you're just bumping it up by 3, you know, you don't have to play with the universal mission.
And you can use the Bioneural Gel Packs on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Hey, you know what? There's some rule about if you replace something, all the cards on one thing go to the next thing. Can you move this on your Intrepid and then use the champagne to change the Intrepid into the Voyager, and would this stay on it?
That's a very interesting question.
You may not get the attribute because it doesn't apply anymore, but when the ship completes the mission, you can still toss it to score 5 points.
Why wouldn't you still get the attribute?
Well, because it says any ship with that stuff is attributes +1. Not this ship is attributes +1.
Ship is... Well, it says place on your ship, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
So you place it on the ship, semicolon.
And then it says ship is...
And then it says the ship, you know, ship is attributes +1.
Yeah, maybe so.
So once it's on the ship, you have to put it on one of those ships, but...
Wow, that sounds like cheating to me, so it probably doesn't work. But it is an interesting idea.
I don't know. Going back to the old Premier standby, if you use your Trek Sense, that's kind of the whole point, right?
You're right.
You take the prototype, you take it out for a test drive, You're like, okay, this works. You give it a name, you slap an attribute bonus on it, and now it's the Enterprise.
Right. All right, very good. The last is, it kind of reminds me of that card. The last objective I want to talk about was a safe place to hide, and that is it's the ship flying through the Badlands. You play it on the table. You discard from card from hand to put it on your unsolved mission, non-homeworld mirror mission. And while it's there, if you've got a staffed ship, you know, uncloaked and all the normal stuff, you get to draw an extra card. And then once you, if you solve that mission, you bounce it back to the table, and then you can discard a card to put it somewhere else in the next spot you're going. So you got a card draw. Unlike the you know, opponent's mission where you got to, you know, the TNG one where you've got to be out exploring, this is actually right. Where you wanted to go anyway. As long as it's not a homeworld, you can just keep bouncing it where you're going for free card draws every turn, assuming that you left some people on board a ship. And if it's one of the small mirror ships, that doesn't sound too difficult. You'd probably want to have some, you know, officer transporter skill aboard your ship anyway, right?
Yeah, and I like that. I found it interesting from a flavor perspective that this is so much different and yet has the same idea of Pride of the Fleet, which is instead an event.
Yeah.
But it plays, you know, you have to play it on that specific ship, class of ship, the big giant Negvar, and basically you're out promenading. It's like, here I am, come and get me.
Mm-hmm.
No, I get a card draw and you don't because I'm a badass. What are you going to do about it? And you have to come out and have more weapons in that quadrant to negate that. I thought that was great sort of converse flavor instead of, I'm going to come over here and this is where I'm going to be and I'm going to be safe over here because I'm doing my thing and you leave me alone.
Yeah. So, good stuff. A lot of cards alike in the set. Did you have any you want to chat about or have we chatted enough?
No, I think we hit the highlights, and I covered, you know, speaking of, you know, you mentioned how some of these are a little off flavor, but then they seem to bring the flavor back. I liked the conversion of Resistance Tactics, which is initially a Maki-only card in Tui, but they kind of extend that to Bajoran Resistance and Maki and DS9 Terran Empire personnel, which makes sense because they are basically a Resistance at that point.
That's good choices. Good choices for the affiliations to make them on that card, so that should be fun.
And I also liked that the whatever the new recruit mercenaries is, because I kind of looked at this and went, oh, it's recruit mercenaries. Why do we need another one of these? But it's actually, you can negate the point loss if you're playing DS9 or Mirror Taric Nor with the Terran Empire. So, you know, that makes it quite useful.
Yeah, yeah. I'm flipping through some of the cards in the supplemental, and I'm just, I'm reminded how nice they look. You know, the new images.
Like, yeah.
Brainwash looks so pretty, as opposed to the old image, which is, you know, the grainy Q Continuum Decipher GIF. Just to go back and find all these images, it's actually taking so much work, but good stuff in there. Okay.
Some of these I think are hilarious, like Doppelganger.
Well, you know, if you're playing in a small quadrant with everyone's playing the same thing, that's pretty funny. There's going to be a lot of Ciscos running around, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great. That'll be a lot of fun. And a lot of these will be interesting to have in block. I like, you know, like having Stratagema back. You're going to have such a, like you were saying, such a small quadrant where you're going to have, you'd be very restricted on your choices as far as homeworlds. You know, it was fine when you're out running around, but I think it'll be this will be a nice addition to have at least a safe haven.
Yeah.
You say, I'm at my home. Leave me alone for like 5 minutes, please.
I like there's so many decisions to make because there's all the cards that play if you don't have a headquarters, but there are all these other cards that you play if you have a headquarters to be safe. So, what are you gonna choose?
Yeah, I think this will be from a block perspective, a much more interesting transition, including DS9 block and mirror block versus TNG and DS9, because that was such a divisive block. It's really, okay, well, here's new cards, but you're still really going to be playing TNG or DS9. And now this is going to have a lot more, no pun intended, crossover.
Agreed. It'll be interesting to see what's, you know, there's a lot of cards that were rotated out. It'll be interesting to see what the new block tournaments bring. Whether or not it's people just trying the latest and greatest, or, you know, I almost feel like that crossover set as a whole, there's a lot of stuff in there that just adds on to so much of what was in the DS9 block. So it's not as if, you know, you're starting over from scratch, which DS9 certainly did, you know, when the Phoenix block rotated out. It was a brand new set, and it was going to be tough to play any of those. Whereas now, you're jumping in, and you already have so many DS9 tools. It should be on par, I think. We'll see.
Yeah. Definitely much more interesting now, I think.
All right, very good. Let's see. You want to talk about what was up?
I was going to say, we'll have a chance to find out in 2 weeks when we have our crossover release event.
Yes.
Here in town. But this weekend...
This last weekend, there was a little four-person tournament here in San Diego. Neither of us went. It was second edition. I was out of town, and you were at a ball game, right?
That is correct.
So I'm just looking at the results. It looks like Johnny won the tournament. Modified win and two full wins with a big fat Borg deck.
Looks pretty standard. Quintessence, unyielding.
Mm-hmm.
Overrun?
Yeah, Matt took second place with a deck called My Timing is Digital. I'm looking for droids, but I don't see it, so we'll have to chat with him about what made this deck interesting. Matt took second with that TOS deck. Charlie took third with a undisclosed deck. Maybe he's keeping it secret for a future event, or maybe he just hasn't posted yet. JD played the winning deck title, Fueled by Photons and Ankari Squeezins, which I'm guessing was a Equinox-based deck. Yep, won two ships.
Seems likely.
Yep, very good. So we both missed out, so we'll chat with somebody about that in time and maybe have some results. Also, there were a world championship going on.
Oh, right. Large tournaments.
It was in Australia, and Ken Tufts won 1E and 2E. Congratulations to Ken. Wow, well done.
But he failed to win the most important tournament.
Yes.
It would have given him the trifecta, the triple crown.
That would have been phenomenal. Michael Van Breemen won the day, so congratulations to MVB or... TNS, depending on which three-letter acronym you're using for him. he is the only one who hasn't posted a deck list. I'm guessing that's because he's still writing it, and it's been several days, and it's probably 400 cards or something ridiculous.
Seems likely.
Anyway, congrats to Ken. I see Bajoran Resistance Cell in his 1E deck, and I see TOS, which is interesting. I've been wanting to play I always thought TOS would be good at high-level events because they've got all that policey stuff in it. But I would be interested to see pretty much copy his deck and play it sometime. So, you know, next time we have 2E tournament, that's probably what I'll do because, you know, I cheat like that. But congrats to those folks, and I guess we're looking ahead to Worlds next year in London, right?
Yeah.
Excellent.
That'll be great.
All right. Hope turnout was as good as that, and good luck to everyone else. That's the end of the championship season, so that means we should be jumping into league season anytime now, in the next month or two, right?
Yeah. Well, and no sooner have we closed that out than, as we're talking, we hit the tick. And there's an announcement on the page for the 2015-2016 league season beginning in October, and we get spoiler for the league participation foil up here on the site, which is... oh my god, I can't wait to have a foil of this card, Quantum Incursions.
Quantum Incursions is going to look amazing as a foil, no doubt.
Now, do you think that's going to mess up the QR reader?
I hope they thought about that. no, it should be, I mean, it was already on gray, so it's just going to be reflecting light, so it should be okay. I don't know. It's still going to look fantastic, though. So
bring your D6.
Historical Curiosity is the second edition card, and Dabo, which I don't know if it's going to look great as a foil, but it's still a good-looking card, so that'll be a
yes,
coveted
indeed.
Prize. We didn't actually run a league last year. It was the first year we haven't done one in a long time. I think it was just because I don't even know. I wasn't running it because I haven't been running tournaments since the boy was born, so... I think Charlie had taken over, but not really enough to run a league. So we'll probably be back this year, and I'm guessing Charlie's going to run it. So we should have some of these to go around.
Fantastic.
Brilliant. Well, that was well-timed. I did not know that was going on today, so that worked. There's one other thing that I should mention briefly, and that is there is a small raffle happening in a few weeks. I think it's the third week of October on a Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon around 1 o'clock. It is not as large as the previous raffles, but it is up, and there's some good stuff in there. So there you go. Go ahead and check it out. There'll be an article up in the next few days to detail what time and when. So there you go.
The draw date is the 18th. Okay, good. Not the 17th.
17th would be interesting for me.
Very bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it should be.
Although I suppose you could do it.
Oh, I certainly
could. You just run off and.
yeah, that is for the locals. That is the day of the rocket race, which is our scavenger hunt in San Diego that we run. I have certainly run raffles under more strenuous circumstances than that, but it will be the day after the day we're decompressing. It'll be on a Sunday afternoon. So hope you can join us in the chat room. I've got some extras to give away there, and as I posted the boards, the next raffle has already been entered, so the next day the new bins will open, and the next set of things will already be there. So you can take a look at that. I'll be adding to that over time, but we should have some time for that. I have
Fantastic.
A handful of cards here from the last raffle that didn't go out due to a snafu with our order generation. That should be taken care of in the next few days. All the other ones are gone. They're all out, so they're on their way. You can check your order history to see if you have a raffle prize coming your way. If not, it should be generated in over the next week or so.
Excellent. Well, that brings us to only one item left on the agenda, and this is one that you were very excited about.
Oh, how wrong I was.
Passion.
No, this was... I found this episode to be, for the most part, in the same line that the last one, and perhaps the one before that, if I can remember back that far. There was a fairly sensical... as opposed to nonsensical, I guess, a plot that went forward. You know, there were several parts. It seemed to follow, I don't want to say logically, because there was a lot of that that didn't, but, you know, they did this, and then this happened, and then he did this, and then they went over down there, and then this happened, and they had to do something, and they got to the end. So it progressed as a story should, unlike some of the craziness that happened, you know, at the beginning of the season.
Yes.
Fair?
Extremely fair. I was going to say one of my biggest gripes all season has been how horrible the pacing has been, and how they've tried to been doing too much and too little, or too, you know, a whole
that
lot
an
of
outstandingly
in,
stupid
in no
idea
time, or stretching too far out. This was an excellently edited and paced episode. Like they had, it was just like you were saying, A, B, C, D, you know, everything was well timed. Some horribly out of character stuff, and I don't just mean the emotional love potion stuff, but you know, aside from that, you know, I thought it was decent. I think it was honestly on par with the other Mud episodes.
Okay, and equally crazy randomness. Yes, I'll give
yes.
it that. man, so Mud is they get a note that Mud's on this planet, and they got to go arrest him. I don't know. And he's hawking things to these random miners, which were interesting in their own right. You know, a bunch of random miner characters.
Yeah.
Sure. You know,
literally.
They've got geology.
Miner and miner.
Yeah. There were some aliens. There were some guy who sounded like Scotty under his breath. They were interesting characters. And then Mudd, you know, showed up, or Kirk and Spock beamed down to apprehend him. They showed everyone that he was a, you know, flim-flam man or whatever. And then Spock uses his phaser, to dig the biggest trench I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
That was like
a ship's phaser trench.
Exactly. I thought, were they planning to have the ship shoot the thing from above or what? But,
Yeah, just right out the gate, all I could think of was, so they've tracked him out here to this planet. They would have known that this planet is not part of the Federation. Somebody should have said, okay, well, do they have an extradition treaty, or do they not obey our laws? Do they even respect our authority? No, we wait until we get there and beam down, and Mudd tells us this.
This version of the Mudd persona has law.
Yes. Well, you know, you got to know it to break it. And then Spock just starts, you know, okay, Spock is going to point out that he's a flim-flam man. This is great. He's going to use Lot. Oh, my God, he pulled out his phasers and he's shooting stuff.
Like, yes.
And he just, like, he shoots the subject, which turns out to be a creature, which runs away, and then he digs a giant, like, that was, like, how much damage is that? And this is not even a Federation planet.
Yeah. I particularly,
what is happening?
The miners who are probably digging through the planet have never seen a phaser dig that quickly so before. I'm surprised they didn't jump him for his gun.
Yeah.
So they bring him back up because the miners are going to, you know, ambush, you know, are throwing rocks because that's what miners do, to get away. And so he convinces Nurse Chapel to take one of these one of his love potion crystals, and maybe a stretch, but the way they set that up, how it was, you know, using his charisma, his bluff checks or whatever. They spread it out neatly while other things were going on, and she totally, you know, she started out one way and slowly changed her mind. I thought that was paced well.
I liked I liked her, like, applying to the appealing to the scientist in her. You know, like, oh, well, you know, if you don't believe me, take it. You can go and analyze it, or, you know, use the scientific method and find out if it's true or prove me wrong. And, you know, and she is the, you know, on TOS, she's the only one that we know of that's, like, pining for somebody, so she was obviously a good target. I thought that was all really well done. And, of course, it doesn't work on Spock right away, because he's Vulcan.
Yep. No, and when she kind of did a little faint thing, and he palmed the phaser and her ID card, that was pretty slick.
Yep.
That was, I like that. And then she went off and tried it sitting in Spock's lap. Can I help you?
Yeah. That would be illogical. Yes. No, it would be stupid. She storms out.
Yes.
And he's like, okay. Oh, man.
Yes. As you can deal, we actually have things to say that were good about this episode. And then it started working, and I immediately thought, okay, well, now we've gone off the rails. I could almost, you know, I'm wondering how much Leonard Nimoy enjoyed doing these just weird non-Spock lines. It was a little creepy.
Yeah.
And then, so it kind of works, but not till later. So she's ticked off and goes to find Mudd, who's escaped using her badge and phaser, and he's going to get a ship. And she stops him and going to shoot him with the phaser, and then there's a fight, and the crystals go into the air supply, which will become important later, which, that was nice. That was, you know, that followed.
I thought that was great. That was, like, the epitome of what they haven't done so far, which is, here's a quick visual that it was easy to follow, that covered a ton of exposition.
Yeah.
Like, they drop the crystals, they break, there's a swirl of air, and it swooshes up into the air systems. Like, okay, the rest of the ship's going to get infected. I know what's going on. You did not have to spell that out for me. Great job.
Yep. So he escapes with her going down to the surface. Meanwhile, Spock is going nuts for Christine, and he's about to tear the bridge apart to go down to the surface. Which was just amusing. And
you want to try and stop him?
He's got a point. I mean,
yeah,
it'd be like trying to stop Data taking over the Enterprise, right? I mean, there's really not much you could do. So he beams down, and Kirk goes with him, and they're running around down there. Meanwhile, the ship is totally infected, and Maress is going after Scotty, and Scotty doesn't seem to care. I mean, he had this look on his face like, huh?
You want to know why that creeped me out so bad? It has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that she's a, you know, cat person.
Yeah.
And everything to do with the fact that it was Mijel Barrett trying to be all sexy, and all I could think of was Loaxana.
Oh, my.
Constantly, you know, she's trying to be like a cat, so she's constantly purring, and it just sounds like Austin Powers trying to be all... It's like, step on back, you're creeping me out, cat lady.
So, meanwhile, Kirk and Spock beam down to the planet and start 1,000 slash fix, right?
Yes, they do.
They're all chummy in arms and walking around.
I think the same thing about you.
Oh, my
buddy.
My dear friend Spock. They find Mud and Chapel, and the rocks all around them wake up and start attacking. So they run away, and the rocks are running after them. And then they have like a 5-minute interlude where they're trying to talk to each other and they're raising the ship. And then it's like, oh yeah, we're being chased. And then they show the rock monsters chasing them again.
Thanks for not chasing us for a while.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Oh my God. And then we were treated to another glaring example of the fact that they spent all of their money on the voice talent, because they have one monster noise, one monster sample that the guy, like Caitlin was sitting there kind of in the background on her computer, and she's like, what is going on? And it's like, is somebody just pressing a button over and over and over again? Like on the sampler, there's the monster noise button, and they're, you know, like no variation. It was, and because it lasted so long, it became increasingly obvious and painful.
Man, you know, it's funny. I was so focused on the rock version of Jabba the Hutt with the teeth and the three eyes, and the rock version of the Rancor that was fighting him, I didn't even notice the wonky sound effects. But in the middle of that, we got Spock saying my favorite line: "That is an outlandishly stupid idea." Outlandishly stupid idea. Which,
I mean, I'm sorry. My emotions.
Which, you know, it makes me think, how many times throughout the original series and the movies
Spock wanted to say that?
Did he actually want to say that to Kirk? But didn't, because of his, you know, Vulcan control. That is an outlandishly stupid idea. And apparently, I can download that file, so I'll add it to the end of the show, because it's hilarious.
I'll download it now.
That's...
Maybe we can distract them.
That is an outstandingly stupid idea.
That is an outlandishly stupid idea.
It's brilliant. All right. I'm going to play that over and over again. Perhaps we can distract them. All right. where were we? All right. So they... Mud has a couple of crystals left, which at one point is 2, and then when Kirk throws them, it's like 8, but it was only for 1 or 2 frames, so I'll forgive it.
Did he break them? Oh, wait, and then it goes in his mouth, and it's 2 again.
Yes, so he throws it into one of the monster's monster's mouth, and the monster kind of shudders for a minute, and then his arm comes down and kind of nudges Kirk and says, yeah, I'm your friend. And then the two monsters fight. It turns out, after all this, the people on the Enterprise are kind of waking up from their hangover, and they hate each other. The effects of the drug, they make you love the person that you touch or whatever that you're near, and then after an hour or so, you hate them for several hours. Which, sure. They wake up enough to beam the crew up, and wow, a few moments in love paid for with several hours of hatred. Your potion is scarcely a bargain, Harry. That was Spock's line. He says. some other creepy things, and then it closes on him grinning mischievously about everyone.
Oh yeah,
that was kind of creepy. Not the best ending, last 20 second ending bit. But overall, when we started talking about this episode, I hated it, and now that I've relived it in my mind, it's so much better.
Yeah, I've had that experience a couple times while we've done this. It was all right. It was fine. It would have been a stellar season 3 episode. on a relative scale.
That certainly would have been interesting to watch the actual cast act out all these things instead of just the stone-faced cartoons that didn't have a lot of character. But
yeah, and we could have gotten a lot more. They did a good job of editing the script for this one so that it fit the time available. But you could easily, expand some of the time on the planet and expand some of the time on the ship while they're under the influence to get some interesting character scenes of them, interacting while they're being, what's happening now? It was like a little bit like the drunken episode, mm-hmm. The Naked Dime, when everybody's running around and, dancing and stuff.
I think one of the things that you had asked beforehand, if they were going to get the actual actor to do Mudd's voice, and it was the same guy.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And he was, chewing as much scenery as ever, which was great. It was perfect.
Ursinoid Minor. That's what they called those guys at the beginning. All right. Well, anyway, I got to give this a good rating. 3 out of 5 or 3 out of 4. Especially in my own memory, I'm going to remember it a lot better than I think it was. But I think talking about all the good points kind of brings it up a lot.
Yeah, I think it's all relative, but I think 3 out of 5 is a fair assessment of this episode. Definitely not a complete waste of time.
All right. That said, the next episode is called the Territon Incident, and we'll see if that lives up to as good as this one was. That image of Kirk and Spock in arms is going to be burned into my brain. It's one of the ones on the memory alpha site. That could be a card. Spock's line about that was an outlandishly stupid idea. There were so many. There were very well written lines throughout this, I think.
Yeah. I would love to see something like the outlandishly stupid idea, just. Stop two characters that are named in each other's lore or something. You could just do the generic love potion where, you could actually play it on yourself. Or you could play it on an opponent's, away team. And, until the end of your turn, everybody's attributes +1. And until the end of your next turn, everybody's attributes -2.
Yep, perfect. I like it. All right. Good stuff. If you sat through this as well, please send us a note and we'll talk about it. If you're looking for what we're going to talk about next, it's the next one in line, the Territon Incident. We'll see what it is. And that's what we have to look forward to next week.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to go download this new set and put it on a flash drive so I can take it with me tomorrow and try and find someone to print it for me, get some cards cut up. Our tournament is on my wedding anniversary, so I don't know. We're going to have to see if I'm going to be able to make it to that. I don't know if we're going to be celebrating on a different day, if we're going to be doing it on that day. I'm going to make a deck anyway because I like these cards, and I'm excited to see how they're going to work. But I don't know. This is going to be kind of a busy month for us. I know you have Rocket Race business to attend to.
I will be buried, I'm afraid, so I do not think I'm going to make it. If I do, it will probably... Well, I've already started taking apart my last deck. I would like to have played that again. If I do make it, it will be an old deck and probably will make everybody sad because new decks are the wave of the future and you should play a new deck every time. But it is unlikely I will attend. So you'll have to take notes and let me know how it goes and let me know how the new cards are. It'll be fun to see.
Sounds like a plan. Well, I hope everybody out there is going to enjoy the new crossover cards coming out. I am Sir Rogue.
And I'm Sir Dan.
And I will remind you all to expand your power in the Mirror Universe.
And I will run it.
run. You cannot hide and you cannot defect. They are always watching you, but you cannot detect. Section 31. Section 31. Section 31. Section 31. Section 31.
That is an outstandingly stupid idea.